Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Are you an OSU graduate? Are you an OSU student? Are you a former or a current member of the OSU staff or faculty? Today we're talking about a place that might be close to your heart, the University District. To learn more about the history of this area of town, watch Columbus Neighborhoods University District, the latest WOSU documentary in our Columbus Neighborhoods series. It airs tonight at 8 p.m. on WOSU TV. Today we're going to take a look back ourselves, take a look around, and look ahead at Columbus's University District. So my question for our listeners is, are you a graduate or on staff or faculty at Ohio State University, or were you? What was your off-campus university experience? What was it like when you lived here? Or did you ever try to live there and move away? We'd love to hear that too. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page, and you can tweet me at Ann Fisher, WOSU. Here to kick off the program are the coordinators of the Neighborhood Institute at Ohio State University, History Professor Stephen Kahn. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
And also Adjunct OSU History Professor David Staley. David is director of the Goldberg Center, and he's also an adjunct associate professor in the Department of History at OSU. And along with Steve, he co-founded the Neighborhood Institute. It's a gathering of university and university district residents. We'll talk about that in a little while. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks very much, Ann.
So tell us about the Neighborhood Institute. What's its purpose? David, why don't you kick it off?
It seemed like a pretty simple idea at the time.
They all?
We were forming a campus working group of people on the university side who were interested in urban affairs, urban issues, and in particular those that had an interest in the neighborhood surrounding the university. And Steve and I hit upon the idea that, well, if we're going to have a series of academic conversations about these neighborhoods, that it made sense to invite people from those neighborhoods to be a part of the conversation. And it turned out to be a pretty stunning idea, as it turns out, because no one at the university had created something like this, and residents from the university district were just thrilled at the opportunity to be able to have this kind of interaction. And so for the last 2 years, we've been having a series of gatherings at Nighthouse at the Humanities Institute on 15th Avenue. And in addition to speakers and presenters from the university, we've had speakers and presenters from the university district as well talk about its history, some of the issues the district is facing at the moment. It's been a pretty exciting group, pretty combustible group to be a part of.
Oh, okay, good. So there's been arguments, Stephen?
I wouldn't say arguments okay. So much. I think what it tapped into, I think David's right about this, I think it tapped into this otherwise untapped reserve of interest, enthusiasm, sure, debate, absolutely, but it seems as if we put people in a room together who all of a sudden really realized they wanted to talk to each other, shared a whole bunch of interests in common, and had just never had the excuse to do so. And, you know, for the price of some cookies and coffee, we've had some really lively conversations about a whole range of things.
You've also studied and looked at the university district over the years and over the decades. And there was one segment in the film last night that talked about OSU President Gordon Gee's concern when he moved here the first time back in 1990 and how horrified he was. But there was an earlier effort to revitalize the area back in the 1950s.
Well, I think that's I would tweak that just a little
okay.
bit. What happened in the 1950s, and this was something, a project that grew out of this Neighborhood Institute. It was a course I wound up teaching with the senior history majors last year. They did all the research on this, which is the perfect kind of course to teach because I didn't do any work at all.
Yeah.
What we investigated was when urban renewal came to campus, and specifically to the Lane Avenue corridor, on the north end of campus. And this is this episode took place, let's say, approximately from the mid-50s through the mid-1960s. And what it resulted in was the demolition of a neighborhood which was, you know, single-family houses and perhaps a couple of small apartment units, and replacing that with the great behemoth blocks of dormitories and other sorts of university spaces that are there now. I don't know that anybody at the time thought of this as a way of making the neighborhood much better, and I think that's really part of the problem. They thought about this as solving some of OSU's problems, and they were able to get federal and state money to do that without a whole lot of consideration of what the consequences for the surrounding neighborhood might be. And that's what my students investigated.
And OSU's problems were a lack of housing for the students they had. It was way below the typical for a university the size of OSU.
Yeah. First and foremost, what this is the ripple effect of the baby boom generation and the GI Bill, which enabled vast numbers of people to attend college who, without the GI Bill and those federal supports, probably would not have been able to go to college. And what that meant, not just at OSU, but at a lot of big universities, they got much, much bigger. And then all of a sudden we had this dilemma of where to put them. And that's what resulted in both the North Campus dormitories and the South Campus dormitories as well, on both edges of campus.
But, David, a lot of big universities were going through this post-World War II influx. What decisions did OSU or the university district make at the time that was different than what, say, a Michigan State or, an Indiana IU was making?
Probably not that much different. I couldn't speak to those institutions. But as Steve can speak at length, one of the unique situations, I think, with Ohio State is that certainly among the Big Ten universities, we're only one of two who sit in the middle of a large metropolitan area, Ohio State and the University of Minnesota. So the issues that the university deals with is really in a very different context than what you'd see in say, Bloomington or Lansing or in Lafayette, for example.
David's quite right about that. I think when OSU was founded, it was founded way out in the country as far as those people thought about it in the 1870s and 1880s, and the center of Columbus was a good 2 miles away. Then the city grew up all around it. And I think OSU has struggled over the years, not just in the 50s and 60s, but before and after as well, to think about what is its role in a dynamic urban environment. And it's not a position that most other Big Ten or even most other land-grant institutions have had to face, because they are still, many of them, located in smaller places.
David?
We've really hit upon, I think, the key here is trying to understand what is the relationship between the university and the surrounding neighborhoods. When we first started this Neighborhood Institute, I was one of the things that really struck me were the number of maps that I saw depicting the university district, and they seemed to fall into sort of two categories.
There were lots of different kinds of
of different maps. But if I could simplify them down, they came in two types: one that depicted the university as part of the university district, and one that excised the university from the university district. And I think that at various stages in the history of this institution, I think the university has sort of either voluntarily or involuntarily sort of cut itself off from the surrounding neighborhoods. Maybe that was part of the situation we found ourselves in the 1990s. And so through, as we see in the documentary tomorrow, the Campus Partners as sort of one effort to try to redress that.
Yeah, I mean, Neal Avenue in its day was a dirt path.
That's right.
They didn't build up streets to accommodate the university per se.
Yeah. No, and that was true of Columbus as a whole. Mm-hmm. I mean, at one point, there's a terrific story about the city of Columbus. It was so stingy with its infrastructure improvements that it ran out of water right during World War II, because the voters here wouldn't approve any new sewer lines and water lines. And so that's right. In some ways, the university's has lagged along with the city in developing a sense of what a city ought to be and how it ought to function.
Universities, I think, colleges and universities have sort of traditionally viewed themselves as sort of apart from the world. There's a reason why Ohio State was built on farmland way far away from the city. That was very typical, I think, certainly of Ohio colleges.
Sure, and nationally, yeah.
Right, absolutely. You locate in either a small town or certainly out in the countryside someplace. Look at any number of colleges across this state. And that, I think, signals a certain attitude that universities in general, not just this university, is sort of emblematic of it. A sense of distance from the world outside the university. We're sort of our own cloister. And as we've been suggesting here, we don't really have that luxury, I think, with Ohio State. One of the statements I've made before is that we're the 800-pound gorilla, the university, whether we intend to
literally
or not.
Literally and figuratively?
Well, yeah. Whether we intend to or not, right. We are going to have an impact on the surrounding neighborhoods. And the question is, are we cognizant of that? Do we act upon that? Or is it sort of a situation of benign neglect?
Well, and let me piggyback on what David said, because he's quite right about this. And I think, generally speaking, what this university has done, and this takes us back to the 1990s, but other universities as well, they've tended to react and seen their urban environments as things to be managed, problems to be negotiated. That was certainly true with the creation of Campus Partners, which was created after a terrible episode where a student died and so on and so forth, and there was a hue and cry to do something about this place. The other way to look at it, of course, is that urban environments provide all kinds of opportunities at all levels of university life, for undergraduates, for graduate student researchers, for faculty, and so on and so forth. And it's not clear to me that OSU has taken advantage of that in the way that it could as well. So we should be clear that it's not just trying to fix these places so that it's better for the university. It's about using our urban context to best advantage in all directions.
The Wineland Park area, the Wineland Park Collaborative, might be one example of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, because they're trying to incorporate students, faculty, campus partners, the whole deal,
yeah,
in that.
And I should say, I am not involved with that directly,
right,
myself, and I am not an expert, and
no,
I don't misspeak here. But generally speaking, Wineland Park is an area, a distressed urban neighborhood in the city. The demographics in Wineland Park are well different from many other city neighborhoods. And what OSU has done is to try and start to build some institutions in that neighborhood which will try to uplift that neighborhood in ways that simply don't remove the people who are already living there. And so it's about schools, and it's about research projects, and it's about other sorts of centers. And it's going to be one of those things that takes a lot of time, because it's not as simple as simply doing a real estate development. It's about building relationships. It's about building histories. That will take some time, and to measure the success of that Wineland Park project, I think, can't really be done quarter to quarter or even year to year. It's got to be measured in the longer term.
Now, Steve, we're going to have to let you go, I know, soon, but if you guys could just talk about, for your purposes, how do you define the neighborhood of the university?
Dave, you want to swing at this? You have the maps.
Okay.
You mean, how do we define it physically?
Yeah, physically.
Because, I mean, there are, of course, those. I think there's a standard definition. I think it's the railroads just near 71, and I think it's Fifth Avenue to the south, and I want to say it's Arcadia to the north. And then the boundary, I think, gets a little squishy looking at the western part of it. There are some maps that sort of push it all the way to the Olentangy River, which would include the university. But then there are these other maps that literally excise out, you know, from High Street onward. That portion is not part of the university district. For my own my own sort of map, I very much include the university as part of that university district. And one of the things I like very much about the documentary last night is that I think they were very clear about that. That the university is a part of that university district, and they tell a story so very well of how these two areas really have been intertwined right from the beginning. The documentary starts in 1900, and it shows how intertwined these two areas are.
We are talking about the university district. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You heard a voice in the background. That's Seth Goldberg. He is the president of the University Area Commission, and he'll be joining us. Golding. He'll be joining us in a couple segments, so stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
State Auto Insurance has supported the quality programming on WOSU for over 30 years and is now proud to support the Columbus Neighborhoods Project. It's a neighborhood as active and complex as the institution it embraces, Columbus's University District, where town meets gown. Do they stand shoulder to shoulder or toe to toe? Learn more about this vibrant, exciting neighborhood when WOSU-TV presents Columbus Neighborhoods, the University District, airing Thursday, October 6th at 8 p.m.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to tune in tonight to WOSU-TV to watch Columbus Neighborhoods, University District. And here's your opportunity to win an iPad 2 and support 89.7 NPR News. Our fall membership drive begins soon, and by making your pledge early, you'll be automatically entered to win an iPad 2. Visit WOSU.org now, make your pledge, and get registered. No pledge is necessary, but your support will continue to pay for the programs you enjoy. Entries are only accepted at WOSU.org. The deadline is October 13th. 63 degrees in downtown Columbus. Expect sunshine today, warming up to a high of 79. Clear skies tonight, a low of 51 degrees. Sunny for Friday and a high of 81. And looking ahead to the weekend, sunny on Saturday, a high of 80. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and today we are talking about the diverse neighborhoods around Ohio State University. This conversation was spurred by the newest installment of WOSU's Columbus Neighborhoods series, Columbus Neighborhoods, the University District. The documentary airs tonight at 8 p.m. on WOSU-TV. It premieres tonight on WOSU-TV at 8 p.m. tonight. Still with us, adjunct OSU history professor and one of the coordinators of the Neighborhood Institute at OSU, David Staley. Again, David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann.
And joining us now is Doug Aschenbach. He is president of Campus Partners, an organization founded in 1995 by the City of Columbus and OSU to lead the changes in the university district. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Thank you.
Perhaps to most people, the South Campus Gateway revitalization is the most obvious impact that Campus Partners has had on the area. But there's at least one big empty storefront where a grocery was located. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, what was that? So a lot of people, they drive by that. That's what they see. And they wonder why. What's the problem with that particular business? Was it a business problem on their end? Or did it tell you something about what the district can and cannot sustain in terms of the kind of businesses you're looking at?
I think that was really an issue of the particular tenant. The space was filled by a tenant called Sunflower Market that was a subsidiary of Super Value. It was really their attempt to get into the healthier grocery model, kind of a combination of Whole Foods and Trader Joe's. But it was difficult when you went there to really do all your shopping. So I think the concept really was flawed. They actually closed the whole division,
right,
not just the Gateway location.
So what have you learned about what works and what doesn't? We know now that it doesn't just have to be 50 bars.
Right.
And so what does? What are you understanding about the mix there?
Well, I think one of the original goals of the Gateway project was to add a type of retail and entertainment to High Street that didn't previously exist. So sit-down restaurants, the bookstore, the film center that focused initially on a lot of art independent projects or films. So it was really intended to kind of raise the bar, no pun intended, on the kinds of retail that existed along High Street. And the goal there being then to attract more mature residents, not just undergraduate students, but graduate students, faculty, and staff to the neighborhood. I would say in general, and this is not unusual with projects that try to transform particular areas, Gateway has been slower to attract customers from some of the surrounding neighborhoods and has really been more of a retail destination still for students, but also, some faculty and staff. So over time, we would like to see Gateway connect with the Short North, and that is happening, seems like, almost daily. The opening of the Kroger store recently added a piece to that puzzle. And so I think over time it will become more seamless in terms of the retail along High Street in the University District, connecting through the Short North and even to downtown in German Village.
David Steele, part of the issue is that people, an older demographic, and that those different demographics that Doug was just talking about, they don't live there. They maybe just go to school and teach at Ohio State, but they don't live there. Is that typical of a university neighborhood to have so few non-students actually residing there?
I'm not certain that's typical,
okay.
No. And again, we can point to any number of examples where there are residential patterns of staff and faculty, for instance, and we certainly have that. I think at the university, the university, I think, has followed sort of a strategy. It's not just simply building and building infrastructure, as campus partners have done so very well, but there have also been initiatives to make it easier through loans and other sorts of incentives to have faculty and staff live in the university district and in the surrounding neighborhoods, which is it's just as effective, just as important, maybe not as visible as Gateway, but I think just as powerful for Gateway. And then I'd just sort of add there a third part of this might be initiatives like Neighborhood Institute, ways to connect the intellectual life of the university with the university community. These are all ways, I think, to make the neighborhood a neighborhood, right? To make it a livable residential place.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues that may be not unique, but at least magnified in the university district is the disparity between the number of OSU students and the amount of OSU on-campus housing.
Right.
Creates a huge demand for student housing close by. And so the value of the real estate is so much higher as investment property and rental property than it is as owner-occupied property that the market, you know, functions rationally and has converted what would otherwise have been single-family housing for faculty and staff to rental housing. And, you know, the part of what we struggle with at Campus Partners is to what extent can you influence the market and change some of those directions, and how much investment does that take versus, you know, dealing more on the other side of the equation and saying if there is going to be that level of density, then how do we improve the infrastructure? How do we improve the city services so that it still is a neighborhood that feels like home and people take pride and ownership in living there?
David Steele?
We've had, as part of our conversations with the Neighborhood Institute, and I don't think this is part of Campus Partners' mandate, but we've heard people from the neighborhood say more schools, for instance, in the university district, mm-hmm. parks, places to bike. Again, these other sorts of maybe non-retail infrastructure changes the argument is it would draw more people, not just simply the older demographic there or the students for their off-campus housing. It would bring in a different kind of more sustaining demographic. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the University District. A conversation spurred in part by the Columbus Neighborhoods University District documentary. It will premiere tonight on WOSU-TV at 8 p.m. We'd love to hear some stories from you if you live in the University District. If you did live in it, have some recollections, reminiscences. We'd love to hear what you think about what's been happening there for the last 15 years. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Harold, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling because I'm wondering if anybody has heard the name Northwood Heights anytime in the last 50 years.
All shaking heads, no.
Well, Northwood Heights is the community northeast of the university, and that's one of the reasons that I'm calling, because so many of the neighborhoods around the university kind of lost their identity. And in the northern part of the university in particular, we kind of got semi-absorbed by part of the university, part of Clintonville, but the portion of the university, for the most part, has seemingly been a little bit neglected.
Can you describe what you're talking about pretty specifically, Harold, because we don't know.
Okay. The area from, say, Lane Avenue north to the ravine between the railroad tracks and the river, but specifically east of High Street and north of Lane Avenue up to the ravine area and Hudson Street area.
Okay.
And that area, for a long time, has gone through the transitional rental kind of ownership patterns that was in the rest of the university,
mm-hmm.
but it has never benefited to any great degree by the influence of the university, other than the fact that some of the infrastructure projects and so forth. And then they built Crewe Stadium, and we get all the traffic and all the nonsense that goes with that, along with the Ohio State Fair and along with the football games and basketball games, and the parking problems that go with all that. And some of the southern neighborhood has, over the years, had parking permits down there. But really and truly, it seems to me that that portion of the university district has been somewhat ignored.
Okay. What about that? How do you make everybody happy? Do you see that as Doug Aschenbach?
Yeah, well, one of the issues I know the panel talked about earlier is the map and what the boundaries actually are. And I think, you know, we think of the university district in terms of its city designation as an area. So I think that's why sometimes the university is left out, because it's actually state land and not part of the city. But in any case, it's actually a fairly small district that has, I think we've identified 13 different neighborhoods. And each of those neighborhoods is very different in terms of its characteristics, its history, and its current needs. So what Campus Partners has tried to do is really begin with stakeholder discussions and formal planning processes to identify what the issues are. And then to look at those issues and say, which ones can we most directly influence that would have the biggest impact on attracting private investors and other people that would attract or that would address the range of problems. So
I was wondering, David Seeley, how much this all is a function of the fact that you have first this big student buffer zone. First, you have this high-priced, high-rent district for students, and then everyone else is pushed so far back, so there's actually this physical separation. Is it part of the problem?
Absolutely, no doubt. I think that's part of it. The other thing that I think about is, as I suggested, we're the 800-pound gorilla of the university. But that doesn't mean that we can sort of do everything. We can't we can't solve every problem. And I'm also not convinced that the university is the cause of every issue that we find in the surrounding areas. One of the things that I encountered when we first began the Neighborhood Institute, and part of the appreciation that we felt from members of the community, was that we were coming in as listeners, not as sort of, you know, here, we're the experts, let us tell you how to, you know, manage your neighborhoods, or let us tell you what the latest research says about this. And they expressed that they appreciated that we didn't come in as not as conquerors, but as sort of know-it-alls, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something else we need to watch in all of this. We could say, well, you know, there's a problem in X neighborhood. Boy, let's get the services of the university behind this, and by golly, we'll go in and solve this. I don't think it's going to resolve anything.
Harold, thanks for that call. 614-292-8513. If you want to join our conversation about the university district with us, Douglas Aschenbach. He is president of Campus Partners. He's only going to be with us for about 5 more minutes. So if you have a question for him, get it in soon. Doug, Campus Partners in 1998 established the Home Ownership Incentive Program for OSU staff and faculty, and 14 years later, 90 faculty and staff members have purchased homes in the district. Is that pretty much on track for what you were shooting for? Because we're talking about how do you integrate when you're going against these market forces. There's not enough housing for students on campus, for the size of campus it is. they're going to rent nearby. How do you battle that?
Well, I think the goals of the homeownership incentive program were obviously to incent OSU faculty and staff to purchase homes in the neighborhood and choose to live there. And that was an attempt, although a fairly small amount of money, to kind of combat the discrepancy between the value of his rental property and the value of his home ownership. I think the market dynamics are so extreme that the amount of money we could offer only helped in a short time. It was a five-year forgivable loan if people lived in their home for that period of time. The money was also divided into two buckets. So the money for home purchases north of Lane Avenue has been expended, and most of the 90 homes have been purchased in that area.
Northwood, up around.
Yeah. The pot of money for homes south of Lane Avenue still exists, and we're looking at how we might reshape that, particularly to support the work that we're doing in Wyland Park with the Wyland Park Collaborative, where there really is a sense of a residential neighborhood with some challenges that we're, you know, working to address. But the ability to invest that money in a neighborhood that really right now isn't a heavily populated student neighborhood, that I think will allow us to create that sense of a place where faculty and staff want to live, as opposed to the tension between, you know, homeownership in a neighborhood that's also experiencing a lot of investment for rental property.
And partying.
That too.
614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. And Amanda, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thanks, Ann. I am a resident of the North Campus area, and I've been there for almost 10 years. My husband and I own a home, and we have two small children. And for the most part, I really, really love our neighborhood because we enjoy all of the amenities of Clintonville, but I get a little bit bigger house for a lot less cost. My question is that I live on East Avenue, which runs parallel to High Street, and I was a graduate of OSU. The thing I've noticed the most, and I love what's happened in South Campus, but one of my concerns or questions is all of the bars that were on South Campus obviously went somewhere. So they moved up to North Campus, where I think we're a much more mixed neighborhood of homeowner and renter. And it's kind of a different dynamic over the last 10 years to our neighborhood, because a lot of, you know, I don't mind the football games. Obviously, we're not going to have parking. None of that kind of thing really bothers me. But the 2:30 a.m. cattle calling down High Street and down our road are, you know, just kind of, it just seems like there's something missing. And I didn't know if there was a plan for the North Campus area in terms of, like, you know, the retail or whatever.
Doug Aschenbach. Thank you, Amanda.
The what actually happened with Gateway is when Campus Partners bought the properties, we also paid tenants that had leases in those buildings to relocate. And tenants received anywhere from $20,000 to $200,000 based on the cost of replicating their space. There were a couple of Gateway tenants that moved to North Campus. There were a couple of restaurants, bars in different forms. And I think what we have attempted to do in conjunction with particularly University Area Commission, University District Organization, is to enforce codes and look at bars where they're not being good neighbors, where there are, you know, maybe are violations, and to be more proactive about challenging the renewal of licenses. That has had mixed success, I think. But that's really what our involvement has been in that issue.
Amanda's question, I think, raises a whole other series of very interesting points. In particular, if you look at the retail along High Street, and we can take the North Campus if we want, the question is, who do those retail establishments appeal to? And if you look sort of at the history of this district, it's not always been aimed at students, let's say. Some of the, if you look at the retail, say in the 1940s, for example, the outlets there, the retail spaces were as much for residents of the community as it was to, I think, service the students. And so maybe as we're thinking about thinking about these issues going forward, we might ask that question: Who is this really serving? And can we change that mix in some ways that it has an influence, or that they're able to serve residents on the other side of High Street, not just on the east side of High Street?
We're talking about the University District, and I want to thank Doug Aschenbach, president of Campus Partners, for joining us today. I'm sure we could spend a whole hour on Campus Partners alone, so I hope you'll join us again sometime.
I'd be glad to.
Thanks, Doug. And an email from Judith before we go. She says, my favorite memory of the University District was when I was very little, and my family lived in married student housing in the early 1960s when my father, like most of the other men there, was going to college on the GI Bill. We had a family of six in a two-bedroom apartment, but everybody in the same situation, all poor students with bunches of kids. The apartments were nestled between a creek and a cow pasture, so it was like living in the country. Thanks for that email, Judith. And also to Amanda, thanks for that call, Amanda. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, a new strategy called Red Map to engineer a Republican takeover of state legislatures where redistricting is pending, and the multimillionaire who poured money into helping that strategy succeed in North Carolina, a key battleground state. We talk with Jane Mayer about her article, State for Sale, in the current edition of The New Yorker. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Sunny skies today, a beautiful day with a high of 79. Clear skies tonight, a low of 51 degrees. Sunshine for Friday and a high of 81.
Support for 89.7 comes from Church World Service, fighting hunger in Columbus and around the world through the 2011 Crop Hunger Walk, October 9th. More information online at cropwalk.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and today we are talking about an area of Columbus. It's called the University District. To learn more about the history of this area of town, watch Columbus Neighborhoods, the University District. It's the latest WOSU documentary in our Columbus Neighborhoods series. It airs tonight at 8 p.m. on WOSU TV. Still with us, adjunct OSU history professor and one of the coordinators of the Neighborhood Institute at OSU, David Staley. Once again, David, thanks for sticking with us this hour.
Thanks, Ann.
And also joining us now, Seth Golding. He is president of the University Area Commission. Welcome to the show, Seth.
Well, thank you for having me, Ann.
I wanted to get to another email, and we have calls waiting. We want to get to those, too. Email from Karen. She says, my husband and I owned Miscellanea Gift Shop in the 1970s near Lane and High. That whole couple of blocks was different then. On the corner of Lane and High was a drugstore. Next door to it, Lee's Market, owned by Asians and featuring some ethnic foods. Then Miscellanea. Then the cinema, which featured foreign films in the 60s, then an old-time barber shop. The little bar at the next corner was, at that time, an IHOP. Thanks for those memories, Karen. If you have a memory you want to talk about the University District, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Seth, a burning issue right now is the issue of the dormitories. We've been talking about it. It's the issue of housing for students has been at the forefront of the conversation all hour. And one of the big problem is Ohio State did not keep up with on-campus housing as the university's population grew and grew and grew. And now President Gordon Gee is saying that he wants more dormitories built on campus, and he wants to require OSU sophomores to live on campus, and this has created some friction. Let's hear what he's saying to justify this. In this clip, he talks about the benefits of connecting students to campus.
This kind of living, learning environment we're talking about, a collegiate system, is one which engages not only ourselves, but it will engage our partners across the street. It's about creating an environment in which students are not simply in class, but they are learning and living and creating. It's not about raising GPAs. It's about creating an opportunity for students to really get fully engaged with the institution so that they're not living, they're not scattered, they're fully involved in this kind of an experience.
Okay, and then in another part, that's from a conversation I had with Gordon Giebeck in August. He in another part of that conversation, he predicted who might not like the plan to require sophomores to live on campus.
First of all, by getting more of our students to live on or near campus as freshmen and sophomores, they will stay on or near campus as juniors and seniors. Secondly of all, the only people who should be fearful about this are those who have oversold and undernurtured our students and have not been fair to them, because they may be the ones who will be squeezed out.
So they may be the ones who will be squeezed out, meaning, I guess, landlords. Seth, what's this issue about, and how much do you get involved as far as being from the commission?
Well, the commission hasn't taken any action or stance on it, so anything I say is basically me as a university area resident. But there are some on the commission who also feel, as I do, that, I mean, you're taking a third of the campus students out of the housing market. That's almost 4,000 people, putting them on the university. Also, by putting them there, it's the food plan comes with it, and the university has added, I think, 30 eateries on university property in just the last.
In just the union alone? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but... that's about right. But you know, we have the High Street corridor, which is, you know, businesses that have been there a long time or have resettled in the Gateway, and you know, it's really siphoning a lot of activity from that strip. There's really no reason half with the freshmen and sophomore students would really cross to the east side of High Street. So that's a real concern. But the properties, and I would, you know, I don't want to sound all negative, but Campus Partners has really, I mean, I was critical with them with the bar issues when Gateway was being built, but the problem, and they've helped with that to a degree, but they've really helped with stepping up to the issue with the blighted properties. The Gateway and all the arteries of streets that go to Summit and Fourth, they've done a great job.
And they've created some housing.
Right, right, and they've de-blighted it. And I think that's sort of the stereotype we have now, that, you know, a lot of these parents are looking back 20 years ago to when it was a mess. And Campus Partners has been really helpful in trying to get the crime down and just cleaning up the area. And really, a lot of the bigger rental property owners have stepped up and worked to in tandem. I know Buckeye Real Estate's done a lot of infill.
So you think the pressure is already there then for the off-campus landowner, the landlords, to improve the situation on their own?
Yeah, and I think a lot of them wanted to see improvement. I mean, you do have, you know, it's easy to paint them with a broad brush that they're all a bunch of money-hungry. But, you know, a lot of them, and I've been surprised being on the commission, how a lot of them are the most responsible and concerned residents stakeholders in the area that we have. So I think that if people were to drive up and down a lot of the streets where they probably dormed when they were or lived, they'd be surprised how it's really not as blighted as they might think, because they're thinking back 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It was a mess back then. But Campus Partners has really done a lot, as have some of the larger rental property owners. And that's what we fear, that with the taking a third of the students, that's a huge number, that it will, at the expense of $240 million to build all those, of now where's that money come from? State taxpayers. It comes from actually the student. And should the university be getting into the property management business, or maybe they should stick to the education business.
Yeah, I should say that I did. We did, of course, invite somebody from the university to join us today, and they declined the invitation. Steve, you're in the North End. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I believe the closure of University High School at Woodruff and High led to the demise of the community. It was the premier high school in the city, academically.
And David, you were talking earlier about the issue of where do you send your kids to school?
Mm-hmm. If we're going to have that demographic in the neighborhood, where will kids be sent to school?
Well, I have a my son goes to Whetstone, mm-hmm. which is where I went. So my daughter goes to Metro School, which is OSU and Battelle. So there are
across the river,
right, mm-hmm. right, and. Actually, we're quite proud of the French-Spanish immersion schools going into the historic Indianola Middle School, and they're trying to historically preserve it, as which it sits next to the Xenos Indianola Park building, which has been one of the few really old preserved buildings. The church has done a really good job with and there's an example of one of our rental property owners sold it for a lot less than he could have just to preserve it because he knew it was a crown jewel in our area. And that's really appreciated by the
So
the
historians. You think there are enough schools, or could there be more?
Well, the problem is, and this is even people that have lived in the area are baffled when I tell them that of the University District, which is from 5th Avenue to the Ravine, only 10%, I think it may be up to 11, are owner-occupants. The rest are rental properties.
Right.
So that's not a lot of people. And the quality of life issues we have people, not as many now because we've addressed a lot of the issues.
But they've also left.
Yeah, that's right.
There's fewer people.
Yeah, we're down to 10% or under occupants.
So
that's why we hated to see Madary be closed, but it's at least being used and preserved. But it's just they're, it's great that they have the initiative for faculty to live there, but a lot of the quality of life issues have eroded the single family homeowner.
Regardless of whether you could afford it or not.
Right, right.
Evan, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You're on campus?
Yes.
Hi, Evan.
Hi. Yeah, I live in the North Campus area, recently moved there within the last 3 years, although I lived there originally from 80 to 84, and in a house that, ironically, is just across the street from the house that we're now buying. And I never recalled conditions in the area being as bad as they are now. And I'm meaning to echo Amanda's concerns. She talked about the cattle calling. I think what she's referring to is the groups of drunken students shouting to each other, talking loudly on their cell phones at all hours of the night, especially when the bars close. We've had frequent vandalism, plants ripped out of our yards, mirrors smashed off of our cars, tires slashed. Our cars in our house have been peed upon, and of course the noise disturbance. And this is just continual. And what I get from people is that the students seem to have a much greater sense of entitlement and abandon than they ever used to. And so that's not necessarily something that campus partners or any university or organization can do anything about directly. But the fallout from that, which is the vandalism and the noise, the disrespect, and the various crimes, is something that does need to be addressed. And I don't think that more development is really the way to do it. It seems to me like the university needs to own up to the fact that the quality of the clientele they're attracting has deteriorated, and that kind of misbehavior is encouraged both by the university's disproportionate focus on sports and by the number of bars in the area, some of which has been a result of the development strategies adopted by campus partners.
Let's hear what, Seth, what do you have to say? Because it seems to be a recurring theme.
Yeah,
thank you, Evan.
I don't think anyone's been more proactive in trying to calm the bar situation down. I live a block from,
than no one more than
myself.
Okay.
Yeah, we've drafted Ian McConnell, the ex-president, and I neighborhood agreements and in all parts of the district for bars. And while some people say, well, they don't have any teeth, they do when they're up against the Department of Commerce or the Ohio Department of Liquor Control. It's a record that they didn't really care what the neighbors.
But
one of the big problems we have, and we appreciate, he's probably what we call an anchor neighbor that he's invested, and we appreciate it. But he referred to it, and like I think three times in this segment, or the term North Campus has been used. We got the beautiful arches that say Old North Columbus, and we're trying to brand it that way, that it's a residential neighborhood. It's not North Campus. It's campus.
But it must still feel like North Campus if you have students, doing cattle calls at 2:30
campus
in the morning.
Campus stops at Lane Avenue, and we want to, you know, people to realize this is a residential neighborhood, and actually it predates the university. So a lot of the houses.
Thomas and Gehanna, you've been waiting. I wanted to squeeze you in, but we're running out of time.
Not a problem. I'll gladly enjoy the show from my cell phone and call again some other time.
Okay, but you wanted to talk about the university stance on student behavior. Do you think they take a strong enough stance or not strong enough?
Well, I clearly think serving in residential life myself when I was an undergraduate, the attitude of college students is that they behave as if they're 14 years old and that their behavior has no consequence. And when in reality they're 18 years old, they can vote, they can take up arms for our country. They have responsibilities and duties to grow up and behave as adults. And I think until the university sees them as adults rather than children, you'll see the kind of acting out that the last caller mentioned. And what I want to know is the university willing to step up their intolerance of that kind of behavior and have real consequences for the students, maybe at the expense of some students staying at the university.
Okay. Thomas, thanks for your call, and thanks for waiting. Thanks, Evan, also for your call. That's probably a conversation for another day, is the whole issue about how the university manages student behavior off campus, mm-hmm. right, Seth? It has to have come up before in your meetings.
Yeah. Let me just conclude with, I don't know if a lot of Bob Singleton, he was worked for Channel 4 reporter. He's what I call an anchor neighbor. He lives right off High Street. But he thinks it'd be a good idea for the president to live,
yes,
live on campus, and I think things might change on the east side.
So. Yeah, that's an interesting idea, too. David Steele, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the invitation.
David Steele, he's director of the Goldberg Center and adjunct associate professor of history at Ohio State University, and he is also Seth Golding, president of the University Area Commission. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Marburn Academy, a forward-thinking school for ADHD and dyslexic students, inviting you to an admission open house Monday, October 10th at 7 p.m. More at marburnacademy.org.